Brian Lehrer on WNYC. National holidays are supposedly created to bring people together, celebrate by taking a day off from work or school. So how did today, Columbus Day, become one of the most controversial national holidays? And how did Columbus's statues become lumped in with Confederate ones as one of the most controversial of history's possibly shadowy figures? Well, here are three really bad things Columbus did that can make you question if you really want a big statue and a major traffic circle named after him at the gateway to Central Park. One, throughout his years in the New World, Columbus enacted policies of forced labor in which natives were put to grueling work for the sake of profits. Two, according to historian Matthew Dennis, within 50 years of 1492, the Greater Antilles and Bahamas saw their population reduced from an estimated million people to about 500. And then there's the fact that Christopher Columbus never set foot in North America at all. So why is he a hero in Midtown Manhattan? Things like that are why the fate of the Columbus statue is under review by Mayor de Blasio, and why people like Valerie Rivera of the Taino Nation wants New York to join other cities like Los Angeles, Minneapolis, and Austin that have declared today Indigenous Peoples Day.
Hopefully that New York could open their eyes and realize that they're honoring a murderer, a rapist, a man who is horrible, you know. He went back to his homeland in chains.
So let's take some time today to look at some of the history of his behavior that you might not have learned in high school and how he became an ethnic hero to Italian Americans with William Connell, professor of history at and LaMonta chair in Italian studies at Seton Hall University, and Dr. Ray Caprio, who's a professor at with William Connell from Seton Hall. Ray Caprio is later in the show. Hi, thanks very much
Hi,
for
Brian.
Coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Let's take the two things stated in that clip first. Was Columbus a murderer?
Was he a murderer? He did kill people. Let's see, what else?
Was Columbus a rapist?
Was he a rapist? He gave an Indian to a friend who then raped her. He gave a Taino Indian to a friend who then, yes.
Did Columbus enslave people?
Yes, and more so than your clip in than your own words indicated. Probably the worst episode happens when he was viceroy on Hispaniola, and there wasn't the gold that he had hoped to find there, and needing to pay back his Italian bankers. He rounded up 500 Tainos, 500 inhabitants on Hispaniola, enslaved them, sailed them back to Spain. Only 300 survived the voyage, as was typical back then, unfortunately, and then held a slave auction. The good guys here were Ferdinand and Isabella, who intervened and said, wait a minute, these people could have been converted to Christianity. Let's put the sale of these slaves on hold while we have a theological commission, which then decided that possible converts could not be enslaved.
Huh. So
Columbus is sort of on the is on the wrong side of a moral change that's happening there. That's very interesting.
He wanted more slavery, and he got overruled by the rulers of Spain.
Yeah.
And teachers, you have today off because of Christopher Columbus. So call in and tell us how you teach his legacy today in any grade. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Do you teach Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492? Do you teach that he, quote, discovered America? How specifically do you go into these crimes? How do you talk about the intersection between, what might have been a courageous act of exploration and the things that we've just been mentioning? Teachers in any grade, you have today off because of Columbus, so you have the opportunity to call in and tell us how you teach his legacy. 212-433-WNYC. Or anyone else on what you think should be done with the Columbus statue or Columbus Circle or any other hero worshiping tribute to him, 212-433-9692 for Professor William Connell from Seton Hall.
One interesting point to make, maybe, Brian, is that considering all of the things going on in the world today, there's almost something reassuring that we're still discussing Columbus, as we do every year and have for a long time. It's worth pointing out that the very first people to protest the celebration of Columbus Day were Italian Americans. In the 1890s, there were anarchists who were Italian American who published articles decrying Columbus for bringing capitalism and slavery to the New World. And there was a case, a city in Ohio, where the anarchists organized a counter parade with Columbus on a white horse dressed like a pirate coming against the traditional parade and meeting in the middle of town.
Interesting. Well, how did Columbus, of all people, get a national holiday named after him in this country if he never set foot in North America? If there are other people, America's Vespucci, I don't know, Ben Franklin, you know, pick any other figure from American history when actual national holidays are few and far between.
Sure.
Why Christopher Columbus? What's the history?
Well, you have to go back to, first of all, even today, there's a wonderful argument to be made that this was the most momentous day in the history of the human race since the invention of agriculture, the meeting of these two continents in an enduring way. And October 12th is not Columbus's birthday or his death date. It's when this happened, this tremendous thing happened. That's an important thing to keep in mind. But then the first celebrations date to the 1700s, and in particular 1792, at the Tammany Hall in Manhattan, they organized a big celebration, and Columbia became a name, a kind of idealized name. There was a figure of Columbia as a woman who appeared in prints, engravings, statues.
You're not saying Columbus, you're saying
Columbia. Columbia, yeah, but named after him concerning the land. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have Columbus, Ohio, and Columbia, South Carolina, and Columbia College, which replaced King's College. So it became a kind of byword for this new land that was being created here.
Robert in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This is my first time calling in. So I have an Italian-American heritage and background. You kind of touched on the question I was trying to get at before, regarding like why Christopher Columbus of all people, but I guess my question is why haven't other Italian figures risen more prominently? Like we produced Da Vinci, you know, we produced even the three tenors. Like, you know, why? I guess why him out of all of the Italian Italian figures that you could have chosen?
Sure. Well, that really dates to the 1800s. You've got a tradition of celebrating this landing and Columbus starting, as I said, in the 1790s. When in the 1880s, you started having Italians coming in large numbers, immigrating to this country, they saw that there was an existing devotion to Columbus, and they latched onto it as a way of legitimating their presence when really they were at the lowest rung on the ladder of the immigrants who were coming over.
So Columbus has been a big thing and remained a big thing over the centuries in Italy?
Oh, that's interesting. One of the funniest things about Columbus is, yes, he's a big thing. There's a wonderful monument in Genoa and so forth. But one of the great stories about Columbus is that in Italy, there's a jinx associated with Columbus that dates back probably to Columbus coming back in chains, and also the fact that he didn't find Japan and China like he imagined. But the jinx sort of goes like this. Well, you can see how it's manifested. After World War II, the Italian government wanted to build a transatlantic liner, two transatlantic liners, to encourage tourist trade. And they named one of them the Cristoforo Colombo. And in Genoa, they actually had demonstrations in the street against this because to name a ship Christopher Columbus was essentially to doom it There's a sailor's jinx associated with his name. You try not to mention his name anywhere in anything having to do with seafaring activity is the way the jinx is. And so the government went ahead and built it anyway. They built two ships identical. Guess what? The sister's ship was the Andrea Doria, which sank off the coast of Nantucket. And this was seen as a confirmation of the Columbus curse.
Huh. And he really thought when he landed here that he was in India, which is why we call the people who were here at that time to this day, some people do, Indians, even that team from Cleveland that's almost beaten the Yankees in the playoffs.
the Indies, at least. Yeah, he thought he was in the Indies, if not India.
Chloe in Leonia, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chloe.
Hi, I'm just calling to point out something that I never hear talked about, which is that, so I'm a professor at, I guess, what should be called Indigenous Peoples University in the city of New York.
Columbia.
Columbia University, that's correct. And you guys were talking about some city in Ohio, and, you know, maybe it was the capital of Ohio, which should be called Indigenous Peoples Ohio. I think these kinds of tributes have a far bigger impact than you know, a statue or two, maybe even a parade. Not to say that those should necessarily be there, but just that these continuing, talking about pre-Columbian history might be okay, because, in fact, he did start, he did change history by doing all this exploration and stuff like that. But the point is that to pay tribute in this way with these names, I think, is kind of bad.
Is it a thing at the university? Like, you know, at Princeton, there's a movement to try to take Woodrow Wilson's name off some of the buildings and institutions there that are associated with him because of what people are now bringing to the fore that was, you know, well known at the time, but it didn't become much a part of his public legacy about his racial policies. So Columbia, if we're talking about Columbus Circle, we're talking about a statue. Is this a thing among the students at Columbia or Indigenous Peoples University?
I can't speak to the students, but among the other faculty, I have raised the topic with various people, and some of them just kind of laugh or shrug it off. One person said, oh, yeah, there's something going on about that, but that's as vague as it can be. So to my knowledge, no. Maybe I'm not the best connected to, let's say, the history department or other departments that might be more involved in this kind of possible initiative.
Chloe, thank you very much. Enrique in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Enrique.
Yes, hello. I'm calling. I'm not a teacher, but I am Bolivian, in which I guess you would say I look more Caucasian, but I'm kind of been viewed as a man without a country. When people guess my ethnicity, it's Italian, it's Portuguese, it's white. But I, as a result, recently did a DNA test in which, no real big surprise, but 60% Iberian. And 38% indigenous South American Indian of the Andes, which to me, I guess my family, or I am a result of Christopher Columbus with indigenous descent, but the indigenous side of me does not take offense to it, in part because what we compare it with, what we currently have going on with the Confederate statues is, nobody's calling for the yesteryears of let's rape and pillage and let's make the new world Spanish again. Those are he discovered the new world. I also went to college in St. Augustine, Florida, where Ponce de Leon put the Fountain of Youth, and there's a strong sense of Spanish heritage there. But yeah, I mean, for me personally, if not recognizing Christopher Columbus means that we cannot recognize Confederate statues put up during civil rights in the 60s, well after the Civil War, I'd be willing to give that up for the other.
So you're saying that, the Columbus statue is not on the same plane, moral plane, as the Confederate statues, and B, by... like the statues don't mean that much. It doesn't mean it means we're acknowledging Columbus's significant role in history. It doesn't mean that we're celebrating or that anybody's advocating going back to allowing the kinds of heinous things that he did.
and I'm saying that as a descendant of a Quechan Indian.
Right, I hear you, and mixed Iberian.
One of the interesting things there, Enrique, is you're confirming something I've always thought. People complain now about identity politics. I don't think identity is going away. We're getting more and more interested in it. It's got a big future.
Clearly.
I mean, it was just out of curiosity, the DNA test, because I wanted to be able to speak when I meet somebody who is obviously much more Latino than I, even though I'm fluent in Spanish, says that I don't look Bolivian. Well, okay, well, here's the research. Here it is. But, I mean, more than any of that, I identify myself as an American. My parents came over here as immigrants, and I am in the 1%, and that's solely through hard work and student loans and a lot of hard work and a lot of luck.
On the meaningfulness or meaninglessness of statues, Enrique, I'll keep you on for one more follow-up. New York City Council Member Jamani Williams wrote an op-ed in the publication City and State yesterday, writing, "Statues elicit such visceral response on both sides, a clear indicator that they symbolize something deeper, something of importance. It's why they marched in Charlottesville. To deny that there's deeper meaning behind the Confederate statues is to minimize what the battle is about. In that sense, the emotional responses to the Christopher Columbus statue are no different." What do you think about that?
I just think it's the timing. You know, the timing of Confederate statues was during the civil rights movement to remind people that, hey, don't get too ahead of yourself. Whereas I don't believe that the Christopher Columbus statue was put in place to remind indigenous people that we have control over you.
Interesting. Thank you, Enrique. Interesting distinction, Professor.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you consider yourself above all an American. And here there really is something patriotic and inclusive about the Columbus holiday and its origins. It's important to remember in 1892, the first time the holiday was celebrated on a national scale, President Harrison wanted to celebrate public schooling, which was a new thing back then. And so the New York parade, which was supposed to be a model, had first the public schools marching, then the private schools, then the parochial schools, then the Dante Alighieri School, and then the Carlisle Indian School, and then the Hebrew School of Brooklyn, all marching together. And the idea was that public education was going to bring all of these people, including the people who'd always lived here, and the most recent immigrants, was going to make Americans out of all of them. And that inclusiveness should be part of the spirit of Columbus Day today, I think.
Kumru in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello, Kumru.
Hi. Actually, this is interesting. Is it following up what the guest just said, is it inclusiveness or some sort of an integration policy kind of to clear up the previous exclusion of Italian immigrants into this country, because Italians were not considered as, or Sicilians and Napolitanos were not considered white people, but by 1890s, now they were considered part of this country eventually. So to give them something, this day was invented, like the Martin Luther King Day. It's, after all, previously excluded African Americans are now accepted, and here's your day, Martin Luther King Day. Now, my real question was not that. My question was, what is the deal with this name change? I mean, how and why this name change from Cristobal Colon to Columbus? And I was wondering if the guest has anything to say about that.
Well, just that name question, it's simply the Latin form is Columbus. So, and Columbus and Latin was the international language back then. But you have a very interesting question.
Back in the
1500s, from 1492 on, he was Columbus in Latin documents. So but you had a very interesting point about Italians becoming white. One of the things I pointed out in an essay a few years ago that I published in the American Scholar showed how President Harrison, when he established Columbus Day, had fresh on his desk the sad papers concerning the massacre at Wounded Knee, for which he'd ordered an investigation, but instead the panel absolved all of the soldiers who'd killed the Sioux. And the lynching of 11 Italians who'd been acquitted in a trial in New Orleans by a big mob in New Orleans. And again, President Harrison appointed a commission. No crimes were charged. He paid reparations to the Italian government, and there were calls for his impeachment in Congress because he paid paid reparations for the lynching of these Dagos, as not yet President Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, said in a letter. So Italians were really discriminated against, and the idea then in 1892 was let's bring them in, and it was controversial. There was lots of opposition to that.
Kummer, thank you so much for your call, and that really turns the kind of social justice narrative on its head. If we accept this piece of history, that it's certainly true. I think it's been very well documented that there was a time in this country when the Italian immigrants were among the darkest people to be coming into the country, other than, of course, the African slaves and their descendants. And they weren't really considered white in the same way as the Germans and the British and the more northern Europeans. And so if it's true that the Columbus statue and holiday and naming things after Christopher Columbus was actually a form of social justice to a disadvantaged and highly discriminated against portion of the U.S. population, that turns the narrative quite on its head.
It's interesting. There's even a New York Times article from 1892 when they laid the cornerstone for the Columbus Monument at Columbus Circle that says, "Phew, it's a relief after the recent tensions between Italy and America." If there were calls to impeach President Harrison in Congress, there were also calls in the Italian Parliament for declaring war on the United States about the lynching of these citizens. And the monument that's controversial today was seen as a symbol of reconciliation and getting past that difficult moment in the relations between the two nations.
Madeline in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Madeline.
Hi. As a second grade teacher, I like to teach about all the cultures at this time. I do very little on Columbus, except saying that he did a very brave thing by coming from Europe in those days. I teach about the Iroquois Indian, and I give them a full flavor of the diversity of America that was then and now. And that's what I like to do with my kids, but I do not teach that poem about Columbus discovering the ocean blue or ever do a bulletin board just for Christopher Columbus.
Thank you very much. Nick in Edison, another teacher, but in a very different context. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi. Gee, you know, after the nice things have been said, I think it's coming together so great. I don't want to add any negatives. I just want to add one thing that, you know, the Ku Klux Klan was against the Columbus Parade. And I think what you guys have spoken about, and especially the guy who had indigenous heritage, you know, I mean, I take it in the context of the time. And, you know, there was human sacrifice and slavery in all these different tribes and people, and it was a tough world at that time. But I think what's gone on just now, I mean, really, Brian, I give you a lot of credit, man. You wrapped it up beautifully, and I just want to make you know, the Klan was against the Columbus Day Parade too, and listen, I'm gonna let it go at that.
Right.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for your call. And I see he identified himself as a homeschooler, so I don't know if that means he's teaching his own child at home or whatever, but that was the education context of his call. But is that true, to put that kind of historical capper on the points that were being made before? Was the Ku Klux Klan against the Columbus Day Parade because he wasn't in there included favored race?
I know of specific instances of the Ku Klux Klan complaining about Italian Americans participating in actions against them. I can't give you a specific reference KKK against a parade. There could very well, I would imagine that there is something there.
Well,
especially in Louisiana, where there was a major Italian population.
Well, the ACLU recently argued that removal of statues by itself won't solve any problems, but they would suggest that we are ready to deal with the truth in a more complex way in studying history and whitewashing. I'll ask you one more thing on that point. All the stuff that we now are discussing explicitly as part of Columbus's legacy, when President Harrison in 1892, 400 years from 1492, and trying to do something for the growing Italian-American population at that time, established Columbus Day. Was there no talk then about his crimes against the indigenous people?
Oh, there were. There's a postage stamp from 1893 showing Columbus being returned from Hispaniola in chains. He was fired by Ferdinand and Isabella. They deprived him of his title of viceroy. They gave him a ship to come back, and he had a heroic fourth voyage of exploration. Terrific explorer and sea captain, but they didn't want to make him governor again. And as I said, there were anarchists in the 1890s who were protesting Columbus. So it's not as though these are new things. As I think I said earlier, there's something almost reassuring that we're still discussing Columbus at this point. I'd also like to be sure to include a call to Mayor de Blasio to perhaps rethink this idea of vetting all of the public statues in New York. On historical grounds, and maybe give more effort and thought to creating new public art, especially in these areas where he's building affordable housing, things to ornament our life and make it more pleasant in this city.
So we are reexamining who we hold up as a hero. If, you know, we could say the Columbus statue at Columbus Circle is not an acknowledgement that the world changed in 1492 on October 12th by landing here. It's seen as a veneration of the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this country we don't have public monuments for saints, really. You know, instead historical figures are complex. They have tragic flaws, faults, and Columbus certainly did.
And we leave it there with William Connell, Professor of History and La Mata Chair in Italian Studies at Seton Hall University. Thank you so much for coming into our studio.
Thank you, Brian.